Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, I'm Nigel Jones, and I'm Sales and Marketing Director of Practice Plan. And I'm joined today by Andrew Lockhart-Nirams from Lockhart Solicitors. The subject that we're going to be covering in this podcast is going to be how to get a greater understanding of the legal aspects of liaising with NHS England. So Andrew, what are the main areas on which you find you have to advise clients in their dealings with NHS England?
I think the main one, Nigel, is where NHSE want to change something. They either want to reduce the contractual payments that are being made, and we've seen quite a lot of this both in PMS and PDS, or they want the contractor to provide additional services or additional reporting of what they're doing because they need statistical information. So it all comes back to wanting to change contracts. And the key thing which every contractor needs to remember is that a written contract, which is your GDS contract or your PDS agreement, can only be changed with the consent of both parties, and any change should be recorded in writing. And that is the safeguard, really, because you will get NHSC wanting to make these changes, then there will be negotiations, but it doesn't happen till it's recorded in writing. That's probably the main area where NHSC want to make changes. The other one, where I think dealings with NHSC come to the fore, is recovering underpayments. Years back, I think the odd underpayment didn't matter too much and it just got overlooked, particularly back in the days of PCTs and directors of finance, and they took a fairly relaxed attitude about it. Now, NHSE are much, much keener on recovering underpayments, and that's the second area where people get into contact with them.
So when you say that NHSE are a lot more keen on recovering underpayments, does that mean there's been a loss of flexibility from them?
Absolutely. Up until 12, 18 months ago, there was, I think, quite a bit of flexibility if a contractor hadn't quite done this or hadn't quite done that, and the contracts manager was prepared to be sensible and deal with contracts as we would all like, because you're not talking about major breaches. What is happening now is that tolerances are being enforced very, very strictly. And we had a case the other day where a dentist was only 0.03% below the 4% tolerance. And NHSE went after it hell for leather. And that has taken any old-fashioned flexibility, any old-fashioned understanding that contractors might have had a bit of a problem, out of the window. And it's making life very, very hard for people.
One of the areas which with which I'm not terribly familiar, but I hear stories about, is the impact of the introduction of the Compass contract management system. And I guess it has its potential then to have contributed to a 0.03 underperformance. Are you seeing contractual disputes arising out of problems with data from Compass?
Yes, certainly. It's probably the case that the system is now beginning to correct itself. But after Compass was introduced in the last quarter of the NHS year, it threw up an enormous number of problems. And the big difficulty was that contractors weren't able to assess where they were on the playing field. And they thought they were within the permitted band, and then they discovered that they were just outside it. And it caused a lot of difficulties. And I know the BDA have files trying to deal with sorting out compass problems. I think they're resolving, but it's not made life any easier for contractors.
So it's my understanding that if a contractor has underperformed by more than 4%, that actually NHSE have the option to remove the contract. Are they taking that kind of step? Or at the moment, are they just continuing to just pursue the underpayment and leave contracts in place?
I think they're pursuing the underpayment. And as I say, quite vigorously, because the flexibility has gone. And the idea of being able just to correct it a little seems to have gone away. I don't think they're yet in the zone of taking away contracts, unless it is a genuine big underpayment where probably anybody would expect their contract would be at risk. But the difficulty is just the fractions out, and they are treating 96% as meaning 96% and nothing else.
In terms of breach and remedial notices, then, what are the sorts of key things that need to be considered?
It must first of all be the facts. Because NHSE are looking at a potential breach from one side, they can only work on the information they've been given. And if a remedial notice appears, the first thing to do is to make sure you've got the correct evidence and your own facts are correct, and you can present that to NHSE to see whether a proper explanation actually resolves the problem. Because it's just like any court proceedings, there are two sides to the story. And you've got to present your side of the story to make sure that everyone understands the position. And that's really the key thing. And it goes back to things like record keeping. If your record keeping is poor, it's very, very difficult to demonstrate that you've done the right number of things to the right number of patients at the right time and made the right records and so on. And if you get someone with very poor record keeping, which may be thrown up because their KPIs are out of line or anything of that sort, if you don't have the records, you can't demonstrate it that you're okay.
So what sort of things are... For what sort of things are breach notices being issued then? Is it down to the quality assurance framework and the KPIs? Or are there a wider range of things?
I think quite a lot of it is involved with quality assurance because of the emphasis which is increasingly being placed on outcomes. And outcomes has almost become a buzzword in any contract, and all the monitoring stuff is outcomes, patient satisfaction. So if it looks like that, I think it's high on the list of things that NHSE are looking at across their desk. But that said, any range of poor performance is beginning to interest them more, and patient complaints can trigger NHSE interest because things appear to be dirty or unclean or rudeness or anything like that. And the trouble is that once you get a practice that comes onto the NHSE's radar, then the people looking at the radar screen are able to go after anything they think moves. It probably may be performance, but it can be anything.
Right, so that what you were saying before about the fact that there's a loss of flexibility around the performance issues actually is extended into a much wider definition of performance than just the achievement of the activity targets. It sounds like it could be a whole range of things that you have to be sensitive to?
I think so. Pre-2006, I'm sure there was a slightly more we're working together approach with contract managers, understanding that actually it can be quite difficult to run a practice and there can be problems and some sympathy and some understanding is needed. I'm afraid that they're working more and more and more by the book and they're not allowing just a little bit of tolerance, which might help here and there.
So we mentioned in the section of the discussion around underperformance against the activity targets that at the moment NHSE is not really looking to remove contracts from people, but presumably from time to time practices are served with a termination notice. What sort of things do they need to think about if they want to go about challenging that termination notice?
Again, I think it goes back to evidence. If you've got all your files in order, if your records are all in order, and all the sorts of things that a CQC inspection would want to be seeing ready, you've got the evidence to rebut a notice if it's been unfairly put to you. If your records aren't in order, quite apart from CQC, which may trip you up, you are going to find it extremely difficult to show that you've actually done the work. And I remember many, many years ago being in court, and it was a case where there wasn't an entry in the nursing record, and the judge looked at everyone in court and said, if there's no entry, there's no evidence, and it didn't happen. And I've thought about that all the way along. And if there is no record, NHSE will say it didn't happen. And it's very difficult to get around that.
So evidence is the really key thing, and that means recording it as you go along.
Yes, I think evidence, first of all, and I think the second thing is self-awareness, the ability to demonstrate to NHSE that you are aware there have been failings and you can put something right. The worst performer of all is someone who has no knowledge of their own failings or will not admit their own failings. And the General Dental Council will be full of cases where people do not recognise that they've done something wrong. And if you can recognise it, and it's exactly the same with NHSE, and you can say, we have now put in place remedial steps to ensure it doesn't happen, that ought to go a long way to solve the problem. So it's evidence and putting it straight. Those are two absolutely crucial things.
And we touched on some of the issues that have arisen from Compass, but what sort of issues can arise with regard to the performers list at the moment?
I think the biggest issue is some of the delays which are occurring in getting associates onto the performers list. Quite why it should happen, I don't know, but people are finding difficulties in keeping it moving. And I think the other big difficulty of the performers list, which is a real problem, is where contractors do not remember or recognise that they have to notify NHSE if there are changes that affect their continued entitlement to be on the list. If, for instance, they are asked to explain something to the GDC, they need to report that fact. If they are challenged and a possible criminal conviction, again, it is relevant to being on the performers list. But it's very, very easy to say, oh, well, it was only this, or it was only that, and it really doesn't matter, and so on. The performers list notifications are not kept up, and then you'll suddenly find you're in trouble. And it's very easy to forget that one. Everyone's got an awful lot of other things to do, but you have to keep your performers list facts up to date.
So if I've understood that correctly, if you are required to take action as a result of the CQC intervening, that's something that you should be notifying to NHSE for their performance list.
Yes. Yep.
So if I take that CQC point a little bit wider, dentists do from time to time get placed in special measures by the CQC. What sort of support do they need in that kind of circumstance?
I'm afraid to say I don't think there is that much support available. It's possible in some cases, and again it comes back to what sounds a bit like a hobby horse of having evidence and keeping proper records and things, to demonstrate that CQC may be mistaken and you can appeal and so on and so forth. But the amount of support that's available to someone who has been put in special measures, I think, is very limited. I couldn't say today, go and see X or Y or Z and they will help you. It's a pretty empty area.
Well, in terms of working with NHSE, are there any other key points that you think we should cover today?
I think the one message that I would ask people to remember is that if you yourself keep in touch with NHSE or regional team and let them know what's going on in your practice so that you're working effectively in partnership with them, you will have a much, much, much easier ride. We were thinking about transferring PDS contracts without going into any great detail. Effectively, you need consent in order to transfer a PDS contract. If you are in touch with NHSE and you're working with them, the likelihood of you getting consent, getting their agreement, goes up many, many, many times. If you sit out as an outlier in a practice and you never talk to them and you actually think they're awful and you don't have a line of communication with the contract manager, when you then want consent to do something, you're not going to get it. Or it becomes very, very difficult. And another teeny example is people being alert before CQC inspections. If you are in regular contact with the region, the area team, you will get notified that a CQC inspection is coming in 4 weeks because they're friendly and they can see it's jolly good and everybody knows. If you're, again, an outlier and you won't go and talk to the contracts manager is not going to tell you that he, the manager, has just had notification that CQC are going to turn up. If you keep in touch with Health Watch England, they will also tell you that CQC will be turning up. If you never speak to them, you'll never be told. So I think the key thing of working with the NHSE, even if you have had some bad experiences, is to keep in touch with them, ring them up, tell them what's going on, keep them on side, keep them in partnership with you.
Yes, that makes an awful lot of sense, and that reminds me of various talks I've heard Kevin Lewis give in respect of patients, that 70% of patient complaints arise from poor communication, and actually if you can get the relationship right, then you can minimise the chance of complaints. And it seems to me if you get the relationship and the communication right with NHS England and some of the other health bodies, that will make your life an awful lot easier, even if it might be painful at times.
It might be painful, but I think that's an absolutely key message.
Well, thank you very much indeed for your time today, Andrew. That's been very enlightening, and we really appreciate your time.
Nigel, thank you for asking me.